Welcome to Dyslexia, Let's Talk About It, a podcast from the Fundamental Learning Center. I'm your host, Jessica Stong, and I hope you enjoyed last week's podcast with Janine Phillips, one of the founders. If you want more information on FLC's exciting work, you can visit funlearn.org. And as promised last week, here is our interview with Gretchen Andiel, the other mom who inspired this incredible work and moved forward the idea that dyslexia was a topic worthy of conversation here in Kansas. Gretchen's story is, again, one of strength and courage, and I know you will be just as taken by her graciousness, kindness, and, of course, humor as I am. So without further ado, I would like you to meet Gretchen and hear her story. For speaking with us today.
Thank you for asking me.
So excited. So I want you to give us a brief background of how you came to this work.
Okay. The way I came to it was through my child, our youngest daughter, Katie. We are adoptive parents and have four adopted children. I thought I was really pretty smart. I knew how to raise kids, I thought. I'd been an elementary school teacher. And then Katie joined our family, and it was like a whole new experience. It was all of those years of that I had under my belt didn't make any difference. The first thing that we noticed about her was that she didn't respond to sound. And so I immediately took her down to have her tested at, I don't know, 5 months, thinking that, you know, she had a hearing loss. Said, no, she doesn't have a hearing loss, but she's in a noisy household. She probably tunes it all out. Then when she was about 2.5 or 3, started talking, and that was when I decided that I believed in reincarnation, because it was very obvious to me that Katie was speaking Swahili. I mean, nobody could understand a word that child said. And her one of her older sisters could, but the rest of us were completely lost. Then she would miscall things, like we would see a cow in a pasture, and she'd say, oh, look at that birdie. So, you know, we're thinking, what in the world? But we also knew she was really, really smart, because she could outfox her three older brothers and sisters. She could certainly outfox Stan and me. But it was very obvious that something was going on. Well, she was in collegiate preschool, and at the end of her last year in preschool, they called and said, well, you know, Gretchen, we're not sure she's going to be able to go on to kindergarten because she doesn't know her alphabet. So what do you mean she doesn't know her alphabet? She'll know her alphabet by the end of the week. And she did know her alphabet by the end of the week. But that didn't necessarily translate well. And so school turned out to be a huge struggle. And in first grade, she worked so darn hard. But it just wasn't coming, and we tried all the controversial things that we knew that Dr. Mork claimed that it was if you couldn't read, it was an imbalance in your brain, and so you needed to learn to juggle. So Katie became a terrific juggler, but couldn't read. We flew her to Long Beach, California, and had her fitted for the Erlen lenses. She had beautiful purple lenses, still couldn't read. We had her with Sister Sibylina, who was at Kansas Newman, who said she needed to learn to crawl again. And so she learned to crawl again, and was a great crawler, we've all said. Man, can that girl crawl? Couldn't read. And it continued to manifest itself, and each year they would say, well, you know, she can't possibly come back to collegiate. And then I would take enough donuts and beg hard enough, and they would let her come back for another year. But fortunately, in third grade, Dale Ann Jones was her teacher, and Dale Ann had been here as a teacher, had actually been John's teacher, Wichita Collegiate, but her husband had been transferred to Dallas, and so they had moved to Dallas, but they hadn't been able to sell their house. So after a year, she came back to babysit the house and to try to sell it. And during her year in Dallas, she had taught at St. Mark's School, which is a school that has dyslexic students in it. And she came and she said, after having Katie for about 2 months, she said, you know, I think this child has dyslexia. Well, it was before the internet. I went down to the public library. There was nothing on dyslexia. I talked to many people at the Department of Education. I talked to the University of Kansas researchers, the School of Education, the K-State. Nobody knew anything about dyslexia. So we finally decided what we were going to have to do was take her to Texas to be evaluated. And we did. And that was when they said, yeah, she's profoundly dyslexic. That was the diagnosis, but then of course, okay, what do you do about it? And so our solution was that we found a woman here by the name of Susan Pongras, who was a kindergarten teacher at Collegiate, and she agreed for us to send her to Dallas to be trained in the Orton-Gillingham method in alphabetic phonics. I went with her the first week of training just to get my, to understand kind of what it was all about. But then we had the four kids. And so I came home and Susan stayed then for the 2 weeks. And each year afterwards, she went for 2 weeks to Dallas for the training for the next 3 years, and then we sent her to Nye House for a year of training too. So, but that summer before Katie started being remediated by Susan, I felt like we needed to get a jump start on this whole process because she was at the end of third grade and couldn't read. And if we knew that if she didn't have a jump start, she was going to be in a lot of trouble. So in researching, we found Camp Laquasti, which was in South Carolina. Lucia Carnes, who was one of the pioneers in dyslexia, had Camp Laquasti. Katie was third grader. We put her on the plane to South Carolina by herself.
That is incredible.
I know. I know. I don't know how she did it.
And how did you hear about camp? When we were
in Dallas, they had said that there was a camp because I said I've got to jump start this kid. So I came back to Wichita. I mean, we put her on the plane for Camp Laquasti, and she went for 5 weeks,
oh,
you guys.
My gosh,
she took her typewriter with her because that was before computers, but they wanted them to keyboard, and so she climbed on that little plane. She was just a little girl. Anyhow, so I came back, and I thought, okay, now we have found a solution for Katie, but there are a lot of kids out there that we don't have a solution for. So I marched myself out to the Institute of Logopedics and thought I would talk to Frank Kleffner and convince him that we needed to do something about dyslexia. And that man looked me straight in the eye and he said, Mrs. Ann Deal, anyone who believes in dyslexia belongs to a cult.
Are you kidding?
No, I am not kidding.
So what do you respond, what can you say to that?
You say, okay.
Best wishes to you.
Best wishes.
But I know what I need to do for my child.
Yeah. So anyhow, I was asking him for other kids. I wasn't asking for my child. Anyhow. So Katie then came back and from the summer, and she went, and Susan began working with her every morning, 4 days a week at 7 a.m. And we got her through fourth grade, and then the summer between fourth and fifth grade, she went back to Camp LaQuasti for another go at it. And then after her, I began, as she was diagnosed, I began attending the International Dyslexic Association meetings, annual meetings. At that point, it was the Orton Dyslexia Society. And that was kind of my lifeline, that and the National Center for Learning Disabilities put out a publication every year of exceptional students. And so those two things were kind of what I was used as my standard as to what kind of help I wanted to get Katie, or we needed to get Katie. And by going back to that IDA conference, I met the people from Camp Dunnenbeck, which is part of Kildonan, which is a school for dyslexic students. And so I talked to them a couple summers, and they finally convinced me that I wanted to send Katie to or that we wanted to send Katie to camp there, to Dunnenbeck. It's in Amenia, New York. And this is a cute story, I think. So we were sending her back to New York City, where she was going to transfer planes and go get up to Amenia, New York. And she was on the plane with Bill Clinton the day after he had won the Democratic nomination. So she gets to New York with Bill Clinton and their photographer, and she thought, what in the world is my mind? Not only could she not read the signs.
That's it. She's very popular.
She couldn't imagine what she had gotten herself into. Anyhow, they came and picked her up, and she went to camp. And then Diana King, who is another pioneer in dyslexia, was the founder of Camp Dunnenbeck. And so that summer, after Katie finished her 5 weeks there, we flew back to Amenia and met with Diana. And we said, you know, we probably are going to need to look at Kildonan for her high school career, because I can't think that there's any place mm-hmm. that she's going to be able to stay in Wichita. And she said, you know, sooner is always better than later. So this was the summer after her seventh grade year. So I, in tears, went to Bunny Hill.
Oh, yes.
And said, you know, what am I going to do? Is there any way we can keep her here? And Bunny looked at her curriculum and looked what she needed. And she said, well, a really good teacher could probably one-on-one do it, but she said, we don't have the resources.
Gosh.
So we sent her to Kildonan as an eighth grader.
And you made the sacrifice and had the compassion, I know, and had the compassion to do what was right for your child.
But I couldn't take her to the airport. Stan had to take her
by
herself.
No, of course. I know. That is... To have that understanding and knowledge as a parent, to do the hard and difficult thing, I cannot fathom.
It was, and she was one of five girls. It was the first year they were accepting girls at the school. Always before it had been all boys. So there were 95 boys and five little girls. And Katie played on the boys' basketball team. So she stayed there for 2 years, and then after 2 years, they felt like she was ready to be mainstreamed. But once again, coming back to Wichita, there was no place to mainstream her. So in looking at a lot of other alternatives, we decided on Wolfboro, New Hampshire. There's Brewster Academy there. And so Katie packed up and went to Brewster Academy for her sophomore, junior, and senior year in high school.
That is incredible. So. Does she recognize now, as an adult, the sacrifice and the, I mean,
I told her that I was going to be making a podcast, yes. And she said, Mom, I'll be sure and put it on my list of things I don't want to listen to.
Right?
I think it was extremely painful for her. The other thing, though, that is amazing to me about Katie is that she's the most resilient mm-hmm. child I know. Mm-hmm. And she never fought us. I mean, days after school were horrible. She was frustrated and cry and spit and yell and scream. But she always got up the next morning ready to try again. And which is remarkable.
Right. And that, do you think having a learning disability and dyslexia requires that resiliency?
I think it has to, or it's going to get you. It's going to beat you down, because even today, it's not recognized.
Right.
I mean, we can be in Kansas, we can cross the state line, and you can be dyslexic, but as long as you're in Kansas, you're not going to be dyslexic. And it's crazy. It makes no sense.
No. And that you, despite everything that you've done, we still have a battle here.
Every single day.
And I think what's remarkable about her story and your story is one of resilience and one of power and courage and fight and grit, right?
And also it didn't hurt to have a husband that could afford
it.
If he couldn't have afforded this.
And which I think is a great segue into your work in our local community, because you've helped together with Janine Phillips. We founded
the Fundamental Learning Center, and that was, I think that when I put Katie on that plane, or when Stan put Katie on that plane, I did have a red carpet that each time she came home, I'd roll out the red carpet.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because she was coming home. But mm-hmm. I do think that as we put her on that plane, I thought, you know, this should not be happening to mm-hmm. families. They shouldn't have to send their child away in order to get a high school education. And so I think that... But my resolve was that I wanted someone else to do it, that I didn't particularly want to do it. And so when Janine was pulled into the flock because of her son, it was really easy for me to suggest that she go ahead and start doing these wonderful things, and I would support her from the background. And I would help bring the people in to do the training during the summer and all of that, but I wasn't going to start anything. So she went back to Heart Springs. It used to be the Institute of Logopedics, and now it was Heart Spring. And they no longer thought it was a cult because Kleffner was gone, bless his heart. May he rest in peace. She started then a center there. But before long, it was obvious that their missions were different, because she wanted to do teacher training and they wanted to strictly do tutoring and remediation. And she knew that the way that you make an impact is by training the teachers. And so it was actually at National Convention in 1999 that she said, we were rooming together, and C.C. Wolf was rooming with us, and she said, okay, I think it's time for us to start a center. And I thought, oh, no. Oh, no. And so, fortunately, Stan was an attorney, and he incorporated us in 2000.
Oh.
And we opened the doors in January of 2001 and haven't looked back. So.
And have worked... hard, and it has evolved and grown, and
absolutely, we started with 500 square feet in Park Lake Shopping Center,
and now look, it's incredible. And you have maintained your commitment. We talked a little bit about this, how I don't understand, it's so easy to get upset and sad and overwhelmed, and even move towards apathy, and yet you have maintained that grit and resolve to make a difference in others' lives.
We have to, because, you know, when you're in the forefront of a movement, if you don't stick with it, it's going to die. So,
yes.
Yeah, you have to keep going. I remember our first fundraiser. We wrote letters to all of our friends and said, we are about ready now to launch this, and we would certainly like a contribution.
Oh, I love it.
That was our first annual fundraiser.
That is incredible. And you did it.
Uh-huh. It was December of 2000.
And now you are the board chair of the Fundamental Learning Center, and you are raising, in the middle of capital campaign, to raise $25 million.
Well, 20.
20. 20. Oh, I added that five on. Yeah. Do not do that.
Do not do that ever again.
But think of where you've come.
I know it really. But, you know, it's Janine. It's the tenacity of that woman. I mean, she doesn't understand the word no. And she also doesn't know the word rest.
Right.
And take it easy and chill. And I mean, none of that is part of her vocabulary. She just goes and goes and goes. She's the ever-ready battery.
It's so funny. But it requires, I think it is the passion that you both have shared.
We were good partners, yes. Because she would scatter the matter and I would pick up the pieces.
Yes.
And so that's really, you know, what we did for that first 8 years, was that she scattered the matter and then I would pick up the pieces. But then it became obvious that the matter that she was scattering was a lot more than I could handle. So.
And you seamlessly transitioned.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. To the board chair. And what I think is powerful is that your vision and your ability to lead this movement has impacted not just my family, but so many families.
An awful lot of families have benefited so much. Absolutely.
And there is such beauty in that, mm-hmm. that when you look back, I think about what you hope your legacy to be. And
I just hope it's still here. In 20 years, I would like to say that it wouldn't be necessary.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, you know, that would be the best legacy, is to know that Kansas finally became receptive to dyslexia, right. And that we no longer needed to patrol it. But
right.
I can't, it's obviously not going to happen in my lifetime. I hope it happens in your lifetime,
no.
In your lifetime.
It is. But knowing that you have laid the foundation for this incredible work is just so powerful. And, you know, thank you so much for what you've done and what you've given all of us.
Yeah.
We're
oh,
so grateful.
Oh, you're so welcome.
No question. Okay, so the other question I have, well, I have about 1,000 questions, but I'm going to keep it, you know, manageable for you, right? What do you wish that people knew about dyslexia? What was the one thing?
I wish they knew how smart these kids were and that we are absolutely wasting a huge resource. And it breaks my heart to think of these kids that get up every morning to go face the world and they can't learn to read the most mundane of all of the skills because no one knows how to teach them.
Right.
And it makes me crazy.
Yes, it does.
And that's the thing that the takeaway is that in this diverse world, we have to find a place for every kind of learner. And to exclude them because they can't read is nuts.
Oh, it's unjust.
Mm-hmm.
It truly. Now, what recommendations do you have for parents that are in the middle of the struggle, that don't know where to turn or how, what to do?
Well, fortunately, there are many more resources now because of the internet,
yes.
and that does help a lot. My other thing is, though, that you have to be the voice for your child. The child cannot be their own voice. And you'd like for them to be, you'd like for them to be a self-advocate, but they're children.
Yes.
And it's going to be up to you, and you better buy lots of donuts and sweet talk lots of teachers, because that's the way you, the honey's the way you get it done.
And I, you had shared with me that you recorded
Katie's books on tape.
That breaks my heart, because of your love for your daughter and your commitment. It is beautiful. I mean,
we were in Switzerland, actually, the summer before she started fourth grade, and I had won the prizes right, and so I had this trip to Switzerland.
Wait, is this true?
Yeah. So anyhow, we're on the train going through the Swiss Alps, and I'm recording this stupid literature book for Katie, so that she, when she got back to school, she would have her book.
It's incredible. Well, so many levels. That is amazing.
But I'll never forget that, as Dan was saying, "Ooh and ah." And then the little Red Riding Hood.
That is incredible. But you literally were her voice. I mean, you were...
I was her voice. Uh-huh.
In all aspects. Uh-huh. And getting parents to understand that that is their job and their role. And that dyslexia matters and is real and is the greatest gift you can give your child.
It is a great gift that you can give your child, but you know, I have discovered, though, with grandchildren, it's not so easy.
No.
If you don't happen to live there,
yes,
you can't give the voice.
That's...
frustration.
It is. And that you think that these children will always listen to you, and you will, but it doesn't always.
It doesn't act. No, it doesn't.
And life is so... Life gives us children with dyslexia and other issues, health scares, and yet we are always called to...
Yeah, and you're always going to have to be their voice.
That's beautiful. Okay, so any parting tips, recommendations, words?
You get a good assessment. Trust your assessor. You have to know what you're dealing with. And, you know, turn over every corner you can to help that child, because you can't afford to lose a single child's life.
Oh.
And we do that every day. We lose kids. And it's not right.
Gretchen, thank you so much.
Oh, you're
oh,
so
my
welcome.
Goodness. I can't tell you how much your work has meant to all of us, and that your gift and your legacy will continue, and that my children and your grandchildren and the children after them will benefit because of what you've done. So,
I hope so.
Thank you, sweet Gretchen.